What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station today on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.
You know, you pay more than $8 for a pair of headphones and earbuds, you would think that they'd last more than 5 years, right? Don't you think for $8 you would think a pair of earbuds would last more than 5 years? Well, mine collapsed. That's why the pause. I apologize for that. Patrick Penfield joins us now, professor of supply chain practice at Syracuse University. How you doing, Patrick?
I'm doing well, Tommy. How are you?
I'm okay. I didn't see the point in proceeding if I couldn't hear you or me. It would seem as though that would make things intensely more difficult.
I agree.
Okay, let's talk about grocery prices, because I've mentioned, I understand this is anecdotal, but the last half a dozen times I've gone to the grocery store, without fail, I have seen people looking at their receipts as they walk away from the checkout, and I've not normally seen that.
Yeah, Tommy, I'm the same way, and I do a lot of my own grocery shopping. And yeah, tariffs are driving food prices up. So without a doubt, we're starting to see that impact.
So where does it end?
Well, it really doesn't. So unfortunately, we're going to see, I guess when the prices start to top out right after the tariffs have been included. But unfortunately, just starting to see prices increase throughout the whole supply chain.
Why are we seeing it now?
Well, I think it's because with food, you can't really build up inventory. So, it's one of those things that it's consumed, it spoils. So, whatever we bring in, that's what the price is going to be.
Are there any particular food products that are affected more than others?
Yeah, I think your listeners are going to see coffee prices really start to jump up high. Almost a 50% increase that we're going to be getting.
What?
Taxing. Yes, taxing Brazil. But a third of what we get from coffee comes from Brazil. But unfortunately, you're going to see a huge increase. And that, that's going to come throughout the whole supply chain. Olive oil, chocolate, imported wine, spices. These are all things that are really going to start to go up in price.
What can people do to try to offset some of this?
Yeah, I think, you got to, maybe buy store brands, try to buy in bulk, try to shop as much as you possibly can, look to see who's offering the best prices.
And what about other products that this might be affecting besides coffee?
Yeah, produce is one I'm concerned about. So, we've got a lot of produce that we grow here in the States, but we do import a lot. And so, unfortunately, you're going to start seeing that. And that's usually my biggest expense when I go grocery shopping, is just trying to get fresh produce. And so you'll start to see more of that.
So does it affect the produce like apples that are not in season here that we get from other countries, or plums? Or I don't know how the seasons go, but is it primarily imported fruit, or are there costs that are passed along to the farmers that even produce the food here?
Yeah, and that's true, Tommy. So, fertilizer costs have gone up, labor costs have gone up. So you'll see, domestically those prices have gone up. But, yeah, anything that we import from another country besides Mexico and Canada, you're going to be seeing, significant increase.
What kind of increases are we talking about?
I'd say roughly about 5%, from a produce standpoint. But, again, it's going to be one of those things where, this will be a lot more than this. And so it's on an average. And so that's the unfortunate thing. When you keep going to the grocery store, you're just going to be paying more. And if you've got a big family, it hurts. And I know how that is, because they eat so much.
Yeah. When it comes to the inflation ratings, or however they count that, do they factor in tariffs or not? I'm just wondering about the numbers that we see about inflation.
Yeah, so that should be included in the overall numbers. And so, again, we've started to see it's a 3% increase from last year, based on what happened in July. But, yeah, that is included in the overall price increase, Tommy.
So at what point do tariffs come off, or how long would it take for the prices to revert to what they were before tariffs?
Well, the only way that'll happen is if, again, there's some, huge amount of food supply, or, again, there's more supply than demand. But usually what happens with food prices, when they go up, they keep going up. So normally we don't see them really come down after, especially with your packaged foods. usually, you know, when you increase your Oreo prices, they never come down. They just keep going up.
When it comes to other products, not food, how are tariffs affecting them, whatever we have to buy at the store?
Yeah, everything's just going up. You know, your sneakers, your shoes, your apparel, you know, anything, cars, you know, and we'll start, your listeners will start seeing more of that probably in the September-October timeframe. Then it'll start to be more. It's been kind of gradual, and that's because a lot of companies have brought in inventory to kind of buffer against price increases.
Mm-hmm.
But the inventory is running out, Tommy. And so, you know, these companies, they've got two choices. Either we make more money or we lose money. And, you know, most of these companies, they're going to charge more just because they can't afford to lose money.
So what about on the other side of it? Are companies relocating here or not? Because that was the idea. It is generating money for the Treasury, and I get that. But is anybody relocating here? I know they've had a lot of promises about we're going to do this and we're going to do that. But then that brings up the question of, are they just trying to tell President Trump what he wants to hear and ride out his administration to see what happens and get the tariffs taken off? Although in some cases it hasn't happened because the tariffs are still on. Tell me about that. Tell you what, Patrick, tell me about that when we come back. It's 6:20. Tommy Tucker talking about tariffs and prices at grocery stores. And I'd like to hear from you at 504-260-1870. That's the Oakland Art Jeweler Talk and Text Line. Please don't ever text and drive. Some of the texts that are coming in: country's bleeding us dry. Yesterday on the way home from work, my wife asked me to get her and the three kids each a snack. I bought each of them a candy bar and a new stick of deodorant. It was $20, getting absolutely ridiculous. Another one says, think grocery prices are high. How about cable TV going through the roof? Well, you don't need cable TV. Somebody else said they buy coffee in bulk from Costco, and they've already seen a $3 increase. Somebody else texted and said, my 401k is booming, though, LOL. Well, that's good, but does it help you day to day? And a lot of people don't have 401ks, and they're struggling with these prices. We'll talk about maybe who is struggling more than others when we come back. 6:21 traffic, WWL. 6:26, Tommy Tucker, WWO, packed with Patrick Penfield, professor of supply chain practice at Syracuse University. I'm getting some text here. One of them's talking about the price of vehicles. I just bought a new truck, and it was $40,000, and that I got a pretty good deal on it to get it for $40,000. So where do you see that heading? Do tariffs have a lot to do with that, or cars just forever going up?
Yeah, tariffs have a lot to do with that, Tommy. So you're going to see that just because of the price of steel and aluminum have gone up, and you have to import a lot of stuff. And then, you know, we're it's a global supply chain, especially for the automotive industry. And so they're, you know, constantly, you know, trying to, you know, get parts from other countries. So, yeah, unfortunately, tariffs are going to be impacting the price of cars. And a lot of your listeners will see that again. Probably September, October, you're going to start to see prices go up.
All right, so I paid $40,000 for this Honda Ridgeline truck, which, again, I think I got a pretty good deal on. But 5 years from now, is that same truck going to be $90,000?
Possibly, Tommy.
Wow.
Possibly. Yeah. I mean, it seems like each year everything just keeps going up more and more.
I think I'm going to keep it in the garage and sell it in 5 years. Somebody texted in and said, we never would have been in this situation had we kept our manufacturing here in the United States in the 90s. We manufactured way more and we wouldn't be in this situation. First of all, I don't know if that's true about the 90s. Secondly, what is it that led to the manufacturing going off overseas?
Companies looking to reduce costs, Tommy. So that's kind of what it was, trying to increase profits. And so, you know, we saw this outsourcing of a lot of industries, you know, going overseas because labor costs are so cheap. Your listener is absolutely correct. We did lose a lot of wealth when we started to move manufacturing offshore.
So, but why did it move offshore?
For more corporate profits, you know, be able to make more money for these companies.
Because the labor was cheaper.
Exactly, Tommy.
So did they keep the prices down, or did they just increase the profits with cheaper labor?
Increase the profits for the most part, you know, with cheaper labor.
Now, you just said a mouthful there, because what that's saying is it helped companies and stockholders get richer while the consumer were the ones paying the price, but they didn't have the benefit of the jobs because the jobs were overseas. And what you hear all the time is that labor was cheaper, and that kept the prices down, but it really didn't.
Yeah, Tommy, I mean, it's like anything, you know, it's capitalism, right? So, you know, most companies, again, are looking for, you know, the best opportunity to make more money. And so, you know, that's been ongoing, you know, since capitalism started. I think for the most part, I think your listener is right. I mean, manufacturing creates wealth, and it's good to manufacture in the United States. We need to manufacture in the United States. It's just got to be the high technology type stuff. That's the stuff that we want to produce.
So somebody texted and said July call. They want its tariffs discussion back. Whole things in the rearview mirror. Fuel is down and going lower. Border 100% closed. And criminal aliens going home. American jobs are up. Aliens going off of Medicaid and SNAP. We're building more cars in U.S. now. War might end winning. Be positive. Apparently a big MAGA fan there. And that's fine. Everybody's entitled to what they want, but their own opinions. But as far as tariffs go, they are affecting prices, right? I mean, who's winning this other than the U.S. Treasury?
Yeah, absolutely, Tommy. Yeah, prices are going up. And again, for your listeners, if you hear that the United States is collecting more and more money, somebody's paying for that, Tommy, and that's usually the companies that are importing that stuff, and they eventually will have to raise prices. So it's just part and parcel of, you know, this tariff situation. You know, you're getting hit with the cost, you got to raise your costs.
Somebody's paying for it, and it's going in the U.S. Treasury, which would be fine if we would either see the debt paid off or a tax cut, but that's not happening either, is it?
That's not happening at all, Tommy.
Okay. Just trying to follow the dollars. That's all I'm doing. Not making it political. Just following the money. Thank you, Patrick Penfield, professor of supply chain practice at Syracuse University. We come back. We're going to talk to Brian Taylor, director of the Moynihan Institute of Global Affairs at the Maxwell School at Syracuse University. Most recent book, Russian Politics, a very short introduction. We'll recap President Trump's meetings with Putin and then Zelensky and other European leaders when we come back. Right now, time for WWL First News. For that, we go to Ian Ozan. 6:45, quarter till 7, Tommy Tucker, WWL. I'm looking at a screen here, a forecast on TV saying that the Gulf is closed for now because of some different steering systems. So don't be worried about whatever's coming off the coast of Africa. It's far too early to even think about it. However, we will keep an eye on it for you. We're joined now by Brian Taylor, our friend, director of the Moynihan Institute of Global Affairs at the Maxwell School at Syracuse University. Most recent book, Russian Politics, a very short introduction. Good morning, Brian. How are you?
I'm good, Tommy. How are you?
I'm okay. So I'm trying to get a list of who exactly Trump met with. I know he met with Zelensky, the leader of the European Union, the German prime minister, right? I get the titles confused. Who else was there?
So,
Macron was there with the president
of
France.
Yeah, so we had the Ukrainian president, the European Union leader, the British prime minister, the French president, the Finnish president, the Italian prime minister, the German prime minister, and the NATO secretary general. So in addition to Zelensky, seven other important European leaders dropped everything to fly to Washington to sort of backstop Zelensky and his discussions with President Trump.
Entirely different meeting than when Zelensky was there the first time by himself. And what made me say that is when you said backstop. It did change the dynamic of the room, I'm guessing?
It did. And the meeting that everyone was worried about, where President Trump and President Zelensky were in the Oval Office and they let in the media, everyone had, you know, fears of a repeat of the February meeting, but it didn't happen that way. Everyone was on their best behavior. No one was telling anyone that they didn't have any cards or they didn't say thank you often enough or any of those things. So then they went from that meeting to a closed door meeting and then the meeting with the European leaders. And the mood was certainly more positive. And if the meeting in Alaska had everyone afraid that, you know, Putin was winning the upper hand, the meeting in D.C. basically pushed things back to zero again. So the war continues. There is no ceasefire. There are no new sanctions. And as is often the case, Donald Trump is at the center of everything, which is how he likes it.
Let me go back to the meeting with Putin and the press conference or whatever it was on Friday. I saw it. And this is, you know, I know people that love President Trump are going to get mad here, but I thought that Vladimir Putin was terribly disrespectful to the president. I thought he made him his blank.
What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station station today on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.
And I wasn't happy about the way that unfolded at all. Thoughts?
Well, I think Putin thought coming out of the meetings he had had that he had achieved everything he set out to achieve. And we saw over the next couple of days that President Trump changed his position from saying we need a ceasefire first and then a peace agreement to saying we don't need a ceasefire. We can have an agreement without it. Trump had said before the meeting that if they didn't make progress, there would be new sanctions. Then he came out saying there wouldn't be any new sanctions. But most worryingly for the Ukrainians, President Trump seemed to have adopted several of Putin's positions about what a settlement would look like, including forcing Ukraine to give territory to Russia that Russia hasn't even conquered yet, and critical territory from the point of view of the Ukrainian military. So I think part of the reason everyone among the European leaders dropped everything to come to Washington was to try to convince President Trump that his message coming out of Anchorage was not going to get the deal done, and it was just going to put Ukraine in an untenable position. And in that sense, at least, things are better than they were after what happened in Anchorage. And I agree with you, the meeting in Alaska, I think, was kind of unnecessary, and it seemed odd to see the U.S. military down on their hands and knees rolling out a red carpet for the person who launched the largest war in Europe since World War II.
Yeah, again, I'm not trying to criticize President Trump here, but it just seems like you had a president trying to curry favor with Putin, and Putin was like the stuck-up cheerleader that had no interest at all and was looking at him with contempt. Am I wrong?
Well, it's interesting. There was a sound.
No offense to cheerleaders.
No, it's certainly not in Louisiana.
Wait, what?
There was a clip that came out of the meeting yesterday off a, you know, what they call a hot mic, right? Mm-hmm. So I don't think President Trump knew anyone was listening, but he was telling French President Macron that he really think Putin wants to do a deal with him. And ultimately, I think the problem here is there's no evidence that Putin wants a deal unless that deal is Ukrainian capitulation. Otherwise, the war is going to continue. But for whatever reason, President Trump still seems to think Putin wants to come around on this when he hasn't shown any interest in that in the last 3.5 years.
Did you say Putin wants Ukraine to give up territory that Russia hasn't even conquered yet?
That's correct. Wow. That's correct.
Wow. I can't believe that Trump would sign off on that, would he? Or did he seem that he would?
Well, part of the problem, I think, is that, again, not to offend any listeners, but I think most people would agree that Donald Trump is not really a details person, right? Mm-hmm. He sort of thinks
big
about it in terms of the big picture. But if you look at the way Ukrainian defenses are set up in the territory that Putin is asking for, it would sort of open up much of the rest of Ukraine for the Russian military. And Putin's quote-unquote concession was to give back a very small sliver of territory in an inconsequential area. And I don't think Mr. Trump or Mr. Witkoff, his real estate friend who's been doing a lot of these negotiations, really understood the gist of what they were talking about. And it sounds like yesterday some of the European leaders, such as the Finnish president, President Stubb, managed to convey to Trump how important this territory is and why they can't just give it away. So,
this is about sovereignty of a nation, not a real estate deal.
Yes, that's the real problem. I think, you know, Trump thinks, oh, we can just, you know, do something that will satisfy everyone. But Putin wants Ukraine, and Ukraine doesn't want to be under Putin's control. And that's been the essence of the conflict, really, for even before the full-scale invasion in 2022. And that's still the essence of the conflict now.
Let me take a break. We'll pick it up. We come back. Tommy Tucker, WWL, talking to Brian Taylor, director of the Moynihan Institute of Global Affairs at the Maxwell School at Syracuse University. Somebody texted in, and you can respond to this, Brian, when we come back, that land for peace never, ever works. And they cited the Sudetenland. They also cited Gaza. 652, 8 till 7, traffic now, WWL. 657, Tommy Tucker, WWL. Quickly back to Brian Taylor, director of the Moynihan Institute of Global Affairs at the Maxwell School at Syracuse University. It's my text in about land for peace never works. Your thoughts on that, Brian?
Well, being a professor, I hate to use the word never because we can probably come up with some examples in which it was an important part
generally
of the deal.
Generally speaking,
I think that's true. And I think a really important way in which the world changed after World War II is the international order pretty much does not accept territorial conquest and redrawing of borders by force anymore. And what Russia is trying to do, if I can use a multisyllabic word here, is recolonize something that had been part of the Russian Empire, which they had agreed to give up, agreed on new borders with Ukraine, and then Putin comes along and says, well, we've changed our mind. We want this territory back. And that's not the way it's supposed to work these days. And I think this is why the Ukrainians are so insistent that they want some guarantee going forward that if they temporarily agree to stop the fighting and, you know, recognize the current front line as at least a temporary accommodation, that they're going to have European and other support to make sure Russia doesn't do it again in a few years.
Brian, you wrote the book, Russian Politics, very short introduction. How would President Trump most effectively deal with Putin? Because, look, this guy celebrates 50 years in the KGB. I think I would, if I were with him, I would recognize what he was doing and say, you Russian SOB, you're not doing that on me, and I'd walk out the room. What's the best way for Trump to handle this?
I think your instinct is right in that Putin is only going to be forced to give up on his dream of reconquering Ukraine if he is prevented from doing so on the battlefield. And that means putting pressure on him. And Zelensky said coming out of the meeting yesterday that Ukraine has agreed with the help of the Europeans to buy $90 billion worth of U.S. military aid. Mm-hmm. That will make a bigger impression on Putin than any flattery would.
Recolonization is only four syllables, Brian. Take it easy.
Yeah, not that long, I guess, but it's kind of a funky word.
Yeah,
but
I'm not that dumb.
Hopefully the point is clear.
The point is clear, but I'm not that dumb. I'm just kidding. Thank you, Brian. Appreciate your time. We'll take a break, come back, talk about Kratom.
What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station today on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.